Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Dissipation of Glamour initiative. I think we're on number 11. This is our 11th meeting, and this webinar is coming from Finland, and we're in the middle of the Initiation Mystery Week, so we have 10 people with us from all over, you know, different parts of the world, and we're working on the first three initiations and initiation in general. Of course, the promise is, part of the deal is you get to take the third initiation by the time you leave. But we're still very early in the process, so there's several days left, and I'm sure all will be well. I think we concluded talking about the five rules and the five commandments last time, which are part of the Raja Yoga system of development, and these are foundational. So now we're going to continue working with the technique of light, and then we'll go into our continued work with the dissipation of glamour on a group and especially now a national and international level. That seems to be where the problems, well, of course the problems begin with us. And naturally, it doesn't pay to save the world when you can't save yourself. So as the Buddha said, if you overcome yourself, it's like one who overcomes 1,000 armies. So it's no easy task. And whatever the individual glamours may be, we have to continue working on them using our searchlight method, you know, the three types of light which we send out onto the astral plane. So the work of dissipating individual glamour is foundational, and you can oftentimes find it in your ray makeup. He did say, interestingly enough, that basically that fear is the great dweller on the threshold for everybody. It's kind of a lunar response. It's kind of inherited from the moon chain quite a bit. And it applies to everybody, and not just to the second ray type, although maybe it's particularly acute for the second ray type, fear due to oversensitivity. But I think everybody has that. And I suppose, when you think about it, we probably have a number of malfunctions along the glamour line. And let's see if they do correlate with our major rays. Now, you can't just say it's going to attack you on the basis of your personality ray or one of the personality vehicles, because the energy of the soul can be wrongly appropriated, misappropriated, taken in, and distorted. So your glamours may well appear on the basis of your soul ray, and not only on the basis of your personality or mental ray. Whatever confuses the apprehension of reality as it is can be considered a glamour or illusion. So we're living in a very distorted condition. Our consciousness is mostly that, unfortunately, and we're just trying to make our way out of all of these distortions which are coming from wrong emotional attitudes, I would say, wrong desires and separative mental apprehensions. That's the basis of illusion. Wherever there is separatism, there's a big lie, because it's all a unified field, and we have to learn how to see beyond the separatism. And wherever there is an exaggeration or minimization, blowing things up, making light of things that are important, you're going to have the glamour of distortion, basically a distortion which is the root of glamour. So our main work has been lately, given the kind of supercharged, ignorant atmosphere prevailing in humanity at this time, the glamour of hatred and the illusion or glamour of separateness or separativeness, you know, depends on how you want to look at it. Some things you do have to keep separate, you know. You can't have a system of initiation unless you hermetically seal one focus of initiation from another. Even in the initiation ceremony, when the candidate is about to go forward into an area where a number of the individuals who are supporting the process have not yet gone, they are hermetically sealed behind a vacuum, and nothing that goes on in the inner chamber can reach them. That is the wise use of separateness, because you can't just indiscriminately mix things and hope for a good result. It's, you know, every nation has a soul and is supposed to express it, and you just can't make everybody homogeneous, or you rob the will of God from its effective presentation. We have to keep some lines distinct. But of course, separativeness is based upon an attitude of superiority, of rejection, of non-relation, of non-empathy, and it is something that prevents the unity of the soul from being expressed. So that we have to overcome. And when you look at the politics of today's world, we seem to be going in two different directions. One is towards maybe unification, but maybe often unwise unification, too rapid, not thoughtful enough. So that's the secondary approach, which is nice, but it can lead to unforeseen problems. And the other is the sixth ray approach, which is, you know, my orientation, right or wrong. It's my orientation, and you are not following my path, therefore something's wrong with you. And we see that in the world very much today. So we have to find a wise way of overcoming either one of those distortions. There is the glamour of over-inclusiveness, and there is the glamour of rejection and hatred and separateness where it doesn't belong. And that's just the inability to see the commonality of the one soul. Okay, so let's do a little reading here. And, you know, as I say, this little group effort here was started by Olivia Hansen, Tuya Robbins, and myself, Michael Robbins. And we seek to bring the thoughts that are important about overcoming the distortions in our consciousness, to bring these methods into practice so we can all be very useful in solving the, well, really very dangerous problems which at present are attacking humanity. Far more dangerous than we realize. We do have to remember that the Tibetan warned us about an impending religious war. And he said Shambhala would be involved if it ever did happen. And we know that the sixth ray is trying to go out in great glory and take everybody with it. And this plays right into the hands of the forces of obstruction, into the hands of the Black Lodge, and we don't want that, so we have to really purify our consciousness and see all life in a wise and unified manner. And that's not easy, so we will proceed as best we can. Now, we're working on the technique of light here. He says, most of what I've said above, what has he said above? We were looking at that. Yeah, the stage of isolated unity. Really, the master appreciates isolated unity. I'm going to give a little talk coming up on the 2025 group on the 16th, and it's going to be about isolated individuality, isolated identity, and isolated unity. It's going to be about the Leo qualities of I am that, and I am that, and that I am. This whole question of identity, because, you know, in my view anyway, if we could solve the problem of identity, what we think we are, which is usually very wrong compared to what we really are, if we could solve that problem, we would get to the root of a lot of the glamours that attack us. It's mostly because we, you know, the Delphic Oracle said, know thyself and thou shalt know the world. We don't know who we are, And that's where the whole problem really starts. We have a very distorted view of what we are, so we have to find a way to get Libran proportionality in that view, so we have that perfect poise, a completed point of view, and divine understanding. We need those things to be harmless and to rid ourselves of glamour. Okay, so he says, we'll read a little bit and then we'll go into the meditation, okay? And of course, I'll give you opportunity to ask questions. Now, I have a group of 10 people here, and unfortunately, due to my marvelous fifth-ray electronic abilities, they won't be able to hear you. But if you write your question, I'll be able to repeat it, and they'll be able to participate in the process. Most of what I've said above is well known to all aspirants, whether they study Raja Yoga teaching of India or the life of practical mysticism as laid down by such mystics as Meister Eckhart, who's a German, you know, medieval mystic, and the more mentally polarized modern esotericists. Maybe some of you have read Meister Eckhart. He's wonderful. There's a marvelous book which I think you can pull off the internet free. And it's by Aldous Huxley, and it was written maybe 50 years ago or more, and it's called The Perennial Philosophy. It's the whole, it's the whole philosophy of mysticism. And many of the pronouncements of the great mystics, the great unified thinkers, are in that book. You might enjoy it. Apparently, Meister Eckhart is considered to be more the mental type of mystic. Anyway, these latter, who we're supposed to be ourselves, went beyond the mystical vision by arriving at fusion. Now, you can see something very desirable. You love it. You want to go closer to it. You have the mystical attitude, always approaching. Then it disappears and you're unhappy. Then it appears you're happy. Hill and valley experience, all up and down. But fusion is another factor. It's realizing that the thing you are chasing after is what you actually are. I am the seeker and the sought. I'm the seeker, and I'm also what I'm looking for. And that's a great sixth ray realization, that where you fail to just, or you stop putting what's desirable outside yourself, and you realize that you're looking for your deep and real identity. So these more modern, mentally focused, modern esotericists, which we should be, go beyond the mystical vision, and they arrive at soul fusion, and they realize that they are a soul. I need not enlarge on this. It is the higher stage of atonement to which all true mystics bear witness, a more the advanced mystic. Remember, every one of us is to become both the mystic and the occultist. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, there are two great, if I can find it, two great planets here, and you'll see what I mean. And they are in the system of our solar system, and notice they are Neptune and Uranus, with the sun hovering above. And Uranus is the occultist, and Neptune is the mystic, and in order to really become the true initiate, we have to be both the Uranian occultist and the Neptunian mystic. You know, so it's not that one is necessarily better than another. Very interesting, you know, that let's just say that Master Jesus and Master Serapis are both, they're very advanced. They're on they're sixth-degree initiates. They are said to be traveling eventually to the star Sirius, where they will get monastic stimulation. So there's a tremendous mental thing that's going on Sirius. It probably has a fifth-ray soul. Okay, so when you're more on the mystical line, you travel to Sirius to get the occultism. And maybe there's another place, if you're more on the mental line, that you can travel to get the sensitivity. Anyway, we're all going to be traveling monads one of these days. Okay, what does concern us here is how this light is recognized, appropriated, made our own, right? and used in order to dispel glamour, and notice what he says here, and by doing this, render a deeply esoteric service. Deeply esoteric service. It's like the triangles work. Deeply esoteric. Simple things, but deeply esoteric and much needed. So probably if the rest of our lives we could, you know, just dispel glamour and do the triangles work, we'd be doing terrific things for the planet. Okay, a deeply esoteric service. You know, because it's working on the level of the causes and not the effects. What is the true occultist? He works with causes and not just out there in the world of what has happened as a result of the causes. Okay. It might be said that the inner light is like a searchlight. And we're very familiar with that idea now because we use that searchlight in all of our work together. It's like a searchlight swinging out into the world of glamour, you know, the astral plane, and human struggle from what one master has called the pedestal of the soul and the spiritual tower or beacon. So, you know, you're a little bit above it all. There's a marble, I don't know what the name of the painting is, but it's from the Romantic period, and it's a German painting, and it shows a man standing on a sort of a mountaintop that has emerged from the fog. All around is fog, but this person is standing looking out over the fog from a certain pedestal where he can see the whole thing. So that's the thing with us. We're often so caught up in it that we don't see it. So we have to find a way to stand on the pedestal, stand on the tower, and be a beacon of light on the astral plane, and at the same time not be separative about it, you know, and that's the trick, of course. These terms convey the idea of attitude and of distance, which are so characteristic of the mystical approach. Well, the mystic always feels that he's very far away from what he wants to achieve, and occasionally has that joyous union only to be separated because he still doesn't know who he is. Okay, power to use this light as a dissipating agent only come when these symbols are dropped and the server begins to regard himself as the light and as the irradiating center. So we discover, when we discover that we are souls, we discover we are also light. That's what the Christ said, that's what the Buddha said. I am the light of the world. And then also, I am the love of the world. And eventually, they'll be saying, I am the will of the world. So what are you? You know, what you see in the mirror? Or are you more really light, love, and will? Maybe that's your more real identity. Okay, so herein lies the reason for some of the technicalities of the occult science. The esotericist, that's who we're training ourselves to be, you know, we're may not be there yet. The esotericist knows that in every atom of his body, every atom is to be found a point of light. As a matter of fact, these atoms really are points of light. He knows that the nature of the soul is light. For eons, he walks by means of the light, which is engendered, you know, it's created within his vehicles, by the light within the atomic substance of the body. That's the dark light associated with cancer, the sign cancer, but not the light of the soul. So he walks by means of that lesser, lower, elemental light, the atomic substance of his body, and is therefore guided for a long time by the light of matter. That's where a lot of us are. We're still being guided by the radiation of the lower elemental nature. We want to be guided by Leo, the light of the soul. Then he shines forth as a light bearer. We want to be that too. We want to carry the light to people, right? And to ourselves. He learns to fuse and blend soul light and material light. And we do that all the time in our creative imagination when we're getting ready to do the meditation. Then the use of this focused light, as it dispels individual glamour, teaches the disciples the early stages of the technique which will dispel group glamour and eventually world glamour. And this is the next point with which we have to deal. Well, maybe we're jumping a little bit, prematurely into world glamour, but I also trust that many of the people who are in this group have been reading Alice Bailey quite a while, probably have read the glamour book, probably have worked on their own glamorous liabilities. This is a matter of faith for me, otherwise I wouldn't feel in my conscience that we could begin work on the world glamour. But the situation is so critical that we have to do it. The theme with which we are dealing, the light of the soul, okay? We are that light, and that light is focused on the higher mental plane as far as we are concerned. The theme we are dealing with, the light of the soul, as it dissipates glamour in the three worlds, is the most practical, and useful and needed subject for study to be found today. Whoa, what a statement that is. Every once in a while you may read the Tibetan's books time and time again, after 30 years or something, and you finally notice something. The most practical and useful and needed subject for study to be found today. So we're trying to straighten out this distorted mess of perception which keeps us doing the wrong things because we believe the wrong things and we do according to our false belief. It concerns the astral plane. And the service to be rendered is vital. Now, is he using that word in a technical sense? Like it's some kind of etheric energy that we're involved with? The service to be rendered is vital and timely. We've got to do it now. Maybe if more people had done it and been able to do it at the time of the Second World War, it would not have been such a horror, because Germany at that time was particularly affected by glamour. Okay. The ridding of the world, of the individual, and the world of humanity as a whole, of the all-enveloping glamour which holds humanity in thrall, is an essential requirement for the race. Enthrall means in prison. When you're enthralled by someone or something, you're captivated by them. Oh, you look enchanting. Think about the words we use. You look enchanting, meaning you've cast a spell on me. You look enthralling, which means I'm your prisoner. And we say these things as if they are wonderful. Oh, look how you look, enthralling, captivating, enchanting. And I'm a slave because that's how I perceive you. Okay? So it's an essential requirement for the race. The new era, which will open up before mankind at the close of the war, I guess he was writing during the Second World War, will be distinguished by its mental polarization and consequent freedom from glamour. Well, when you go around and you start breaking up other people's glamours, they don't appreciate it, maybe. This is what's called glamour busting. And then, of course, there's the glamour of being a glamour buster. It can always come around and bite you, and you don't know where from. But think about the Aquarian Age. Big fifth ray, right? Big fifth ray in the Aquarian Age. The whole of humanity will be ruled by ray 5 in its personality. And its mind will be Buddhic, intuitive, ray 4. This is different from the Age of Pisces. The Age of Pisces had a third ray personality and a fifth ray mind, hence all the scientific advancement, but now we're entering a still more advanced condition. So it will open up, and we will have mental polarization and a consequent freedom from glamour. Okay, maybe some progress has been made. Then, illusion will, for a time, control until the intuition is more fully developed. Now, normally what we say is like a cloud, we dissipate glamour and we dispel suddenly illusion, if we have the intuition to do it. And we, what do we do? Oh gosh, I forgot the word that we do with Maya. Yeah, we disperse Maya. We disperse Maya, dissipate glamour, dispel illusion. Okay. Then illusion will control until we have the intuition. Okay, this illusion will produce vastly different results to those which follow when men live and work in the midst of glamour. Glamour is foggy, messy, gray, hissing. It's really the serpent. It's like a serpent, and it wraps you in its coils, but you don't see clearly at all. You're just highly motivated for the wrong purpose. The second characteristic of the new era, and this fits with Aquarius now. You know how many people with Aquarius have that scientific attitude. The second characteristic of the new era will be the scientific approach to the entire problem of glamour, which will then be recognized for what it is and will be scientifically dissipated by the use of the illumined minds of groups working in unison for just that purpose. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to do that right now, to work in a scientific manner with a scientific occult technique for the dissipation of glamour. Now, you could probably, you know, go around the world and you could cite the glamours. So, you know, the difficulty, of course, is the glamour of materialism, the glamour of an unrealistic view of the origin and destiny of man, the glamour of separativeness, where my religion is better than yours and my God is better than yours, and all of those really heavy problems. I'll read one more paragraph and then we'll see if there are any questions, and we can proceed. The proposition, therefore, which I'm laying before you, who are the aspirants and the disciples of the world, is the possibility of a definite world service. I guess, you know, none too early, let us say. Some are realizing that we just have to serve along the line of the triangles and the glamour, and they can interact together. Groups will eventually be formed by those who are working at the dissipation of glamour in their individual lives, and who are doing so not so much in order to achieve their own liberation, but with... And this is interesting because it's a group effect. Remember, they have the special objective of ridding the astral plane of significant glamours. So they work on their own. Whoops, Sanat Kumara coming up there. He's very good, too. Very good. Okay, so anyway, we have the whole idea that when you work on yourself, you help everybody. But, you know, you have to work, not because I want to be free, I want to be happy, whatever. You realize you're part of the problem, get rid of your particular issues, you're going to help the whole problem, okay? They will work unitedly on some major phase of world glamour by the power of their individual illumined minds. Now remember, Taurus, second degree, the illumination of the mind, the Ajna center. A lot of people who have Taurus and can focus the light can really work very well at the dissipation of glamour. Some major phase of world glamour, and they will have the illumination to do it. Unitedly, they will turn the searchlight of the mind, reflecting the light of the sun, but at the same time radiating its own inner light upon the mists and fogs of earth. This is one of those old commentary things. For in these mists and fogs, all men stumble. The runner stumbles. The sixth ray enthusiast stumbles. In these mists and fogs, we all stumble. Within the lighted sphere of the focused radiant light, reality will shine forth triumphant. And, you know, what is the sun here? Maybe the soul. But there's more than the soul that has to be brought to bear on this issue. The higher triadal energies have to be brought in as well. The buddhi, where we really see clearly. And then, of course, this from the Upanishads, one of the Upanishads, It's interesting to note that the most ancient prayer in the world, amazing, refers to the three aspects of glamour. And it is for these that the three techniques must be used. What is it? God's technique of the presence, technique of light, and then the technique that dispels the or gets rid of the Maya. I'm forgetting what it is at the moment, but someone can tell me. It's interesting to note the most ancient prayer of the world refers to the three aspects of glamour, and it is for these that the three techniques must be used to release and progress, to make release and progress possible. As you know, the prayer runs from the, Brihadaranyaki, Brihadaranyaki Upanishad. Lead us, O Lord, from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, from death to immortality. And we all use that, don't we? I mean, the Tibetan has shown us how to use that. And, of course, there's a couple more thrown in there. Lead us from chaos to beauty, that's number four. And lead us from the individual to the universal, and that's number five. Okay, so let's see if I'm going to make this very small, so with the hope that we can see quite a bit of it, if possible. If it's too small, let me know. I know it's too small, but I'll try to bring this together so we can have it all under our eyes at the same time. As necessary. Okay. Yeah, we've done. But I love this prayer, you know, darkness to light, the unreal to the real, and from death to immortality. It's so much about the first three initiations, if you think about it, you know. The darkness of materialism gives way to the radiation of the etheric plane, the unreality of glamour gives way to the reality that you see when the distortions are over, and the death of life in form gives way to the immortality when the monad really is influential and begins to be influential at the time of the third initiation. All right, here we go. Now, are there any thoughts that you would like to express? Like I say, if you write them down, I'll read them so that everybody can participate. And if anybody here in the group here in the Temple of Silence has a question, then I'll repeat the question and everybody will be able to use it. Okay. Is there anybody that would like to say something or has a question or make a comment about what we have been reading? Boy, he certainly makes it sound important, doesn't he? The most practical and useful and needed subject of study to be found, for study to be found today. He really makes it imperative, just like he makes the triangles imperative. So it sounds like if we're disciples of Master DK, we cannot escape doing these things. Okay, is there anybody? I'm just, you know, and Brett will help me here, or one of our staff members, Joe or BL, will help me if I miss somebody. Anything you'd like to say or ask, etc. Okay. It's a subtle subject, you know. If glamour were easy to get rid of, we'd all be in a lot better shape. The trouble is, we just don't see it. And people tend to say, oh, hey, that's just the way I am. Well, be real careful when you find yourself saying, hey, I'm sorry, I can't improve. That's just the way I am. You're almost certainly protecting some kind of glamour. Wait a second. Brett, did you have a somebody there?
Michael.
Yeah.
Yes, Helena is asking, please go over the other two. Lead us from chaos to beauty and from...
From the individual to the universal. Lead us from chaos to beauty. Number four, lead us from the individual to the universal. So that's like taking you into the state of isolated unity. You know, because all of us, look, we are all universal beings, okay? What does it say? Let the group perceive the triad shining forth, dimming the light of the soul, and blotting out the light of form. The macrocosmic whole is all there is. Let the group perceive that whole, and then no longer use the thought, my soul and thine, away from the individual towards the universal, and that will make a master of us. Now, chaos to beauty, it takes us to the Buddhic plane, and it will be what is realized by the fourth ray impression at the time of the crucifixion. It's very interesting, the rays that rule the initiations. Darkness to light, ray 7, unreal to the real, ray 6. What's the next one? Death to immortality, ray 5. Chaos to beauty, ray 4. And then there's a change. You might expect it would be ray 3, but it's not. From the individual to the universal is ray 1. Okay. So that's our progress as we go along. And they're wonderful sentences to contemplate. Really wonderful. Because, sometimes it really gets so simple. Do we walk in darkness? Okay. Are we involved with unreality? You bet. Are we dead? Well, if you live your life in the dense physical body of the planetary logos, you're dead. That's life begins. Life begins on the Buddhic plane. So life begins when we reach the cosmic ethers and we extract ourselves from that, the death of that very heavy matter, which has been inherited from the previous solar system. Chaos to beauty, it means we finally realize what perfection is as it is expressed in the divine plan, and the individual to the universal, I am the part, I am the whole. I'm both the part and the whole. Okay. Okay, anything else there, Brett? I see a hand.
Yes, we have a question from Stacia.
Yes, Stacia.
Please elaborate on mental polarization relative to freedom from glamour.
Mental polarization is a difficult question, actually, Stacia. Please elaborate on mental polarization. I'm repeating it for everybody. Relative to glamour. Okay, mental polarization does not mean a good mind. It does not mean you can focus your mind. It does not mean you can think. When it is achieved, it is achieved late in the day between the second and third initiation. And that means that you have gone into the desert and you have wrestled and won, wrestled with the world, third ray, the flesh, second ray, and the devil, first ray. You have wrestled with the world, the flesh, and the devil, and you have won. And now your mind can be held steady. Your thoughtful, good, intelligent mind can be held steady in the light of the soul. And now you are reaching that condition where you can not only focus in the lower mind, but increasingly you're able to enter the thinking process of the soul itself. You're able to focus the mind which participates in the causal body. And by the time you are an initiate of the third degree, you'll be able to do that. And that's the real mental polarization. Not just having a good mind, being able to think fast, smarter, whatever. There's so many people that are not even initiates of the first degree, and they have really good minds. Well, that's great. But they don't have a mind held steady in the light. They have not overcome the three temptations in the desert, and they cannot think in the light of the soul, which is what real mental polarization requires. At least, Stacia, that's my take on it at the moment. Okay, and it looks like Helena has something here. Yes, Helena, and You go ahead, and
Because
I'll repeat it, or is it Sheldon? And I'll repeat it for the group here.
Helena says, awesome, thank you.
Okay. Helena thought that was awesome, thank you. Well, I don't know, I feel like, you know, personally, this subject of glamour is really difficult because it escapes you, you know what I mean? It's so much what you've built up life after life. It's your habit pattern. It's your skandhas. It's all the things that are so natural to you that you don't think twice. Sure, that's how I am. And then the Tibetan says, along comes a nice master and has to blast you wide open and make you feel very insecure. Very insecure about all of your attitudes and your formulations, and then in that insecurity, perhaps you become almost teachable. I've worked in this field for 50 years or more, and I think I'm almost there. I think I'm almost teachable. I hope it happens before, you know, I have to quit this incarnation. Just simplicity. Just say, okay, you know, what's real? What's real? Instead of all the other stuff that continues because we've been doing it forever. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yes, Michael?
Yes.
Sheldon has his hand up under Helena's name.
Okay. Sheldon, you go ahead.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Michael, just a comment and a question for you. Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. No, what I'm doing is I'm kind of repeating you. Go ahead.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Do you think one example of the beginning of glamour busting could be the work of the United Nations panel on climate change? All those scientists coming to understand the nature of what's going on in the world today and putting it out.
Okay, let me pause for a second because he's asking about the beginning of glamour busting. Could it be a sign of this could be in the United Nations Committee for Climate Change, bringing all of these facts together, fifth ray again, you know, making people really think rather than their usual prejudicial response, it's all a bunch of bunk and so forth. I think wherever the facts are gathered and really marshaled and brought together and presented, I think the beginning of glamour busting is occurring. You know, I mean, It's all about truth, isn't it? In other words, if you lie to yourself and you lie to other people and you kind of, you know, embellish and distort and all the rest of it and you don't do the facts, you have the seeds of glamour. So, yes, I would say clarifying people's minds with real facts about what's really going on regardless of the prejudices they have. I would say, yeah, that's some glamour busting. I would say. Other thoughts there, Sheldon?
One more. People who are focused on sustainable development, there are a number of scientists on this line, but there are also transition towns all over the world trying to move to grow food, let's say, healthfully from the ground up and change educational processes, etc. So,
okay.
That might be one more.
Another one. He said people focused on sustainable development, transition towns, where people are actually trying to be realistic about, you know, how they grow their food, how they live with the environment, you know, just from the ground up, factually presenting, factually presenting the counter-argument to desire-filled materialism, which has no sustainability at all. Now, you know, what DK said is that in the old days in Atlantis, desire got so out of hand that people were following and grabbing and pursuing heights of luxury which are undreamt of now. The desire nature got so distorted, they wanted for themselves this fabulous wealth and luxury. I guess the old story about the cities of gold and all of that, El Dorado, all that, it really comes from Atlantis. And that has no relation to the divine plan. It kills the divine circulatory flow, which is about equal shared distribution, the right kind of distribution. And these sustainable living people, they say, hey, what does it really take to keep a ecosystem or a social system going with an ecosystem in a way that can perpetuate and not drain the resources of the planet and not rob people of the energy that should be coming to them? So I would say yes again. And you know what, Sheldon? A lot of people don't want to hear it, you know, because they have their materialistic mind made up about what it takes to be happy in this world, how much stuff you got to have to be happy, whether the other guy has any or not. Okay. Anything else, Sheldon? Okay. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Sheldon. Thank you. Okay. I mean, you know, Sheldon's very practical. He really reads the what's going on. And we have to look in practical areas for the breaking up of glamour. Yeah, so Tuya here in the group has something to say. Tuya, do you want to come closer? You can, but not too long, because I got to repeat you. I got to repeat you. Okay. Practical point of view, she's talking about. Yeah. Christ is on the other side of the fog. Every day, standing, blessing humanity, looking for every earnest seeker. The two sides that will help disperse the glamour, the group that's working down here, and the Christ on the other side. Like the solar angels also helping the building of the Antikorana. So it's a two-way process, the groups that are working on this and the Christ on the other side, and then the individual aspirant and the solar angel seems to take two. Yes. Antikorana is built in two ways. This first thing, glamour, is happening from two sides, and also from the Christ and from the individual within the group. Yeah, no doubt, you know, the Christ is very involved in this glamour dispersing. You know, in chapter 10 of the Rays and the Initiations, it talks about certain great spiritual people who made a big difference. Moses gave the law. That's probably Master Moria, okay? St. Paul made some kind of attack on synthesis. He was made a first-rate synthetic statement. I don't know exactly how it's so, but that's what the Tibetan said about him. So he made holes in the veils by his understanding of synthesis. Then came the Christ, you know, in the middle, and he rent the curtain of the temple from the top to the bottom, so his was the greatest of all the efforts to let in the light. So he attacked on all levels, bringing in the light into the etheric plane. So and you know what's kind of interesting, you got to drive back the glamour onto the astral plane, because we can't totally handle it yet, and we have to keep the etheric planes really clean of the glamour, so the glamour will not work out in action. See, if we can keep the glamour away from the etheric physical plane, it will not materialize, regardless of how it is. Here, I don't know, Tuya, maybe you'd like to come here. Okay. Tuya's thinking about the power of Leo and relating to Capricorn, with the unicorn horn piercing, As a matter of fact, probably the horn of the unicorn is a major symbol for glamour piercing ability. And then think of it, you know, all of you, we're looking out onto the astral plane, we're directing the searchlight. Just think of yourself as a unicorn, and you'll be a good glamour piercer. And he actually tells us to use, he uses that word, pierce the glamour, pierce it. The unicorn kills the king of beasts, the old king, kills the personality perspective, kills the distortion, and it gives you the initiate vision. Yeah. Okay. Right. Good. Anybody else before we? I think you know. I'm not going to take a long time with this, but because next time when we start to read, we'll lead us from darkness to light. He's talking about. He elaborates. These different mantras. So I think, you know, it's very good, and we'll study that the next time we get together, which will be a week from now, and it'll be 5 a.m. GMT, and now it's 5 p.m. So we'll do that. Now, does anybody have any, are there any other questions or comments? Just keep on remembering how practical DK says this work is. Yeah, Tuya has a... Oh, there may be, well, maybe I will, we'll talk, if Tuya and I, oh, everybody, everybody who is involved with this particular glamour attack is going to be on the same boat going somewhere. So we may not be able to do it next week. We're all in the same boat. Floating on the astral waters. No, maybe we're hydroplaning. Maybe it's, what do you call it, one of those catamarans that lifts you above the water and you travel fast. Maybe. Okay. But we'll be in Estonia as part of our activity. So we may not be able to do it exactly next week. We'll talk about it unless maybe one of our staff members would like to handle the process. It's always possible. Okay? Okay, anything else, folks? Anything else? This is a very practical approach. It doesn't have to, it's subtle, but it's not complicated. It just requires discrimination and discernment. You got to see, and you have to be able to tell truth from falsity, you know. So just be truthful with yourself. It starts right there. What was it? To thine own self be true, and it shall follow as the night, the day, thou canst not be false to any other man. And, of course, this is from Hamlet, and it's Polonius speaking, but you kind of wonder whether he actually followed his own advice. It's easy to give advice. But being truthful with yourself, and that doesn't mean tearing yourself down, you know what I mean? Some people think that to be truthful, you have to rip yourself apart and be very gloomy about your prospects. No, it's a more even-handed, clear, almost scientific assessment of what's really happening. Roberto Assagioli, you know, wonderful psychologist and student of the Tibetan and Master KH, he said, well, just look at yourself like a scientist would look at an object and just try to see what's really going on there without getting emotionally involved. And then we may be able to separate our mind from the kama. See what I mean? Because we oftentimes get involved in kama manas. Every time we think something, comes the feeling. Every time we feel something, comes the thought. And these two things are all wrapped up with each other, and you never can be really lucid about it and keep the emotions out of the way. Later you can evaluate using your feelings and so forth. But in the beginning, we've got to be able to see with real clarity, and in a way, we have to have such an attitude that we don't care what we see. You say, "Oh, I don't want to see that. That's too unpleasant." You know what I mean? No, we see whatever is there. That's it. And if it's bad, it's bad. If it's good, it's good. And we don't pretend that what is good is bad and what is bad is good. So it's just honesty, basically, is what it's all about. And you know, if we're I was reminded that H.P. Blavatsky said, I think it's a quote, "I know a youth so pure that no lie would ever cross his lips. And you know who she was talking about? She was talking about the Tibetan, who was one of her sort of advisors, teachers in those early days when she was in Tibet. So if we're truthful with ourselves and with others, it will follow, we're actually going to see the truth. And if we're lying to ourselves all the time or hiding from the truth, we're not going to see it. So glamour busting is all about truthfulness, ultimately. Seeing clearly and being truthful, in my view. Okay, is there anything else before we get into our meditation? We've been talking a lot about initiation today, and it's such a fascinating subject. If any of you think that you have read Initiation Human and Solar for the final time because you know everything that's in that book, think again. I'm sorry. That one really got to me. I don't know how many times I've read that book, but I always have to go back. And when I'm in the middle of cosmic fire and I don't know something, the answer is going to be in Initiation Human and Solar, right at the very beginning. And the snake swallows its tail, you know, Ouroboros. Okay? All right. Let's get into our meditation. But first, Brett, I'm going to actually try to remember where I am with this. And let's say, so this is number 11, right? So it's the end of, is there someone else who wants to speak? End of Doggy, number 11. Dissipation of Glamour webinar, but the dog is a six-ray animal, and the six-ray are the ones that are most afflicted, so okay. End of Doggy 11, and maybe not on the 19th, but rather on the 26th. Maybe that. So we'll talk about maybe someone, neither Olivia nor Tuya nor I can handle it if we're on the boat going to Estonia. So maybe someone will be able to come in here and do the meditation and help us out and give their perspective. You know, we'll talk about it among the people who could possibly do that. Okay? All right, here we go. So this is, we're working on world glamour. We're working on the glamour of hatred and the glamour and illusion of separativeness. An attitude which falls right into the clutches of the what DK calls the great heresy of separateness. The great heresy, the one and only heresy, which means a very, very incorrect thought which distorts your understanding completely. Okay, so here we are. However many of us there are, maybe 30-something of us today, and plus the people who are here, and we'll work on these things. So first, our preparation. And, you know, we're not going to take 10 minutes here. And we're not going to name all the group members. That's more for, you know, groups of 9 and 7 and 5 and that kind of thing. But we will have silence and we'll try to commune with each other as if we are a group of souls all over the world and somehow we are in touch with each other. There is a unity which we feel as we're going to work together, and we really are, you know, meeting on the plane of mind. And in this silence, we do begin to feel that unity, which is a far greater reality than the usual separative perceptions. So with our sense of unitive relationship somewhat established here, we will use the protective formula. And we'll say this out loud, you know, those of you who are, well, you know, you can say it out loud to keep yourself on self-mute, and the people here can say it because it's easy, they're in the same room. Okay. So the group members say in unison, as a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. So we make the sign of the cross from the forehead to the center of the chest, and then the left eye and the right eye. This is the elongated cross, and he describes it. Not a cross of matter. We do have to go through the protection. It's serious business. And people can be overcome in ways they hardly realize. Now, in our preparation, we focus a twofold light of the matter of the vehicles, the astral, etheric, and physical vehicle, and the light of mind, the light of matter and the light of mind. And we bring them up and into the mental body, imaginatively. And when we feel we brought these two lights together, the lower lights, we meditate on soul contact and the recognition of soul light. You know, some people visualize that as a light above the head, or however you want to visualize it. We meditate on soul contact and recognition of soul light. And there really is, you know, this source, this solar angelic source, this angel of the presence source. It's a real thing. And we need to draw upon it. And then we, by an act of the creative imagination, we fuse the two lesser lights with the soul light. We see this happening. we imaginatively fuse the two lesser lights with the soul light. And then we're going to say together, followed by three ohms. We'll use a second ray note sounding the ohms. The light is one, and in that light we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. And then the group says together, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And that light we've created, the triple light, we're casting that out, turning that out upon the astral plane, the light of the soul, the light of mind, the light of matter, the searchlight. Visualize its beam going out onto the astral plane. And now, in this pause, we call upon the spiritual will. It comes ultimately from the monad and from the atmic plane and from the will synthesis petal of the egoic lotus and from the sacrifice petals. And from every will petal, we want that spiritual will to enter and to strengthen our searchlight, strengthen our beam of light. We kind of hear that or see that happening. And focusing the will, we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. So you see, there is the individual beam, and they combine in a group beam, very powerful, broad, powerful, focused on the astral plane. And now we're going to focus our beam of light upon the glamour to be dissipated, the glamour of hatred and separativeness. So we're going to utter these words of power. And each time we do so, we'll follow it by an om. We'll visualize whatever is called for happening. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. Continue our visualization of the united light of the group penetrating, piercing into the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. We're going to do this for 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose. Whilst the light is seen, proceeding. We have now 5 minutes visualizing this work being done, penetrating, piercing, weakening, dissipating, silence and intensity purpose. then with this work visually carried forward, piercing, penetrating, weakening, dissipating, working with will, working with intensity of purpose, working with the creative imagination, we can now refocus ourselves upon the plane of mind. We can turn our attention away now from the seething astral plane, and we can together we'll shut off imaginatively the searchlight of the soul. And we will sound the Om three times, not as each member, but together, sound the Om three times. Now remember, as you work on your individual glamours, you know, the when you realize you're standing in the light protected, the actual visualization of the beam of light is quick, to the point. And you know the old saying in Raja Yoga, when thoughts contrary to yoga arise, think the thoughts contrary to the contrary thoughts. So you can see the dissipation going on and a clarified world condition. Okay, well, tomorrow night, as we continue with the ASK work, provided we actually do it, we'll be working on the invocation of the soul quality of nations. Last time we worked on Great Britain, Russia, and the United States, and we'll see how we will proceed tomorrow, 5 o'clock p.m. Universal Time. Thank you very much for being here, for attending, and for helping to focus the light, which we are as souls, focus that light together out onto the astral plane. And we will we'll post this on Makara as soon as we can, and you can recommend it to other people if they'd like to participate in the meditation. They're very free to go there and to work along with us. So good night from here, and keep up the good work. We'll talk to you before long. Bye-bye.